Welcome to History in Six, a place where we sample history in 6-minute increments. I'm your host, T. Melindel. Today we're going to finish our discussion of the founding of Maryland. Time is short. Let's jump into it. Life in Maryland was challenging. The farming was great from the start. Following Lord Baltimore's wishes, they started with wheat in the first year so that they could feed themselves, and they were able to sell excess at profit to New England. But they quickly moved to tobacco because it was more profitable. So tobacco was a much more challenging plant to grow. First, you had to plant it. And then every so often, you have to top it, which is remove the flower and seeds so the plant's energy wouldn't be wasted there. Which, if you could top them, it would increase the yield of leaves. It improved the quality of the leaves. It reduced the risk of disease because you had less insects flying around it. But it was tremendously labor intensive. You had to go through with your thumb and clip off the top of the tobacco leaf. In those days, it was very easy to tell who the tobacco farmer was because they had a green thumb. The tobacco then had to be harvested and cured, which meant that you had to hang it in barns so the leaves could dry slowly, which would take another 4 to 8 weeks. Needless to say, this was very labor intensive. They would work 12, 14 hour days with a half day Saturday, and well, Sunday was off because it was a religious day of observation. Sunday was off because of religious reasons. That is a considerable amount of more work than what we have nowadays. Nowadays, the average work week is 40 hours. That would have been 3 to 4 days back then. They were working 70 plus hour weeks to survive. But even though it was labor intensive, it was exceptionally profitable. By 1639, Maryland was producing 100,000 pounds of the sate weed, as they called it. A single planter could do about 1,000 pounds. By the end of the 1600s, it was closer to 1,500 pounds because their methods had gotten better. And land was plentiful, so once you exhausted a land, you would just move somewhere else since land was cheap and plentiful in the colony. As such, the colony scattered and spread across the strait. But life was really hard in Maryland. Not only did we have the hard labor, but the houses were real poor quality. As one of the quotes from the time, "Dwellings were so wretchedly constructed that even if you were close enough to the fire to burn yourself, you cannot keep warm, and the wind blows through them everywhere." In summers, you thought winters were bad, summers were even worse. You had mosquitoes, which meant malaria, smallpox, diphtheria, yellow fever, dysentery. Maryland was considerably less healthy than their brethren in New England. In New England, if you lived to be 20, you would generally live to be 65. In Maryland, that was 43. 70% died before the age of 50. 50% of children died before they were 20. And things weren't any easier during the English Civil War from 1642 to 1651. You see, there's a fellow named Richard Ingle who was a parliamentarian fanatic in England. He was given a commission by Parliament to attack the colony because it was Catholic. As such, he joined forces with William Claiborne in 1645 to overthrow the government and install a dictatorship. Ingle himself wanted to plunder. Claiborne, who we saw in the last episode, partnered with Ingle because he was interested in controlling Maryland. The first thing they did was ban Catholic worship. They passed an act outlawing sin, vice, infractions of the Sabbath. They imprisoned and executed their political enemies. They levied heavy taxes. As such, they were not very popular, and were overthrown in 1646 at the Battle of Severn by Maryland militia and Virginians. The battle over religious toleration would continue to boil afterwards. By the late 1650s, toleration won that battle, and Maryland's Toleration Act was passed, which made it an offense to use hostile language about the religion of others. It wasn't absolute, because you could be penalized for denying Christ as your savior, the Trinity, or, you know, the existence of God. So Jews and atheists, they really weren't covered. But for this time and place, It was quite extraordinary. Christians in Maryland could practice their religion without molestation. And it proved to be invaluable to the colony. Upheaval in England, followed by the reassertion of royal authority, brought about the Clareton Code, which was used in England to reestablish the Church of England. The Corporation Act of 1661 required all municipal officials to take an oath of allegiance to the King and the Church of England. The Act of Uniformity in 1662 required all clergymen to use the Book of Common Prayer, which was the official liturgy of the Church of England. Conventicle Act of 1664 prohibited religious meetings of more than five people outside of a church. And then the 5 Mile Act of 65, which prohibited nonconformist ministers from coming within 5 miles of a corporate town, which made it nearly impossible to practice any religion in the Church of England. As such, those of differing faith had no choice but to leave, and Maryland became a perfect target for them. As such, it brought a rush of religious refugees from England. In addition, the Quakers who were driven out by Ingle and Claiborne came back. The Dutch and German dissenters who were kicked out of Europe came as well. The population in Maryland in 1660 was about 2,500. By 1680, the population had expanded to 27,000, which works because you had 12,400 square miles within the colony, so there was plenty of room for these people to expand out in the colony of Maryland to flourish. If you've enjoyed this episode, tell a friend about us. If you haven't already, subscribe to get future content. And as always, have a great day if you want to.